Hello everyone, welcome to the next shiur in our series. I believe it's the fifth shiur in our series on the history of Shilos and Tshuvos, Responsa in America. So the next tshuva we're going to deal with deals with a perhaps a touchy subject, certainly in some communities, and rightfully so, as we'll see what it is. But one which is nevertheless significant in terms of the development of halacha in America, and seeing it within its important historical context. The tshuva is one sent by the Netziv, none other than the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the famed and longtime Rosh Yeshiva of the Volozhin Yeshiva. And the tshuva, the responsum, was sent to the traditional, well, we'll use the term Orthodox, maybe, community of Charleston, South Carolina. And the topic of the tshuva, the question posed and then the answer, which was given by the Netziv, the topic was whether or not one can include mechalalei Shabbos befarhesia, public Sabbath desecrators, whether one can include them in a minyan. And this is a topic which has a long history in poskim, some of which we'll touch upon later at the very end of the shiur. So the first question we want to ask ourselves is, when was this tshuva written? And that's a good question, because obviously if there was a date that appeared on the tshuva, so then it wouldn't be such a good question, right? It would be quite obvious. But alas, there is no date given or written in the tshuva. So what we need is a little rabbinic detective work, or maybe just reading in between the lines a little bit, which can help us not get an exact date, but at least approximate the date of the tshuva. So what do I mean by that? Here, I want to quote Dr. Gil Pearl, and we'll be quoting him a few times during the course of the shiur, but Dr. Gil Pearl has written extensively on the Netziv. It was the topic of his doctoral dissertation. And when he looks at this tshuva, Dr. Pearl points out that the Netziv references another of his works, perhaps his most famous one, which is the Ha'amek Davar. The Ha'amek Davar is the Netziv's commentary on the Torah. And as Dr. Pearl points out, the commentary, Ha'amek Davar, was only published in 1879. So if the Netziv is referencing something which was published in 1879, unless he's referencing this commentary in its unpublished state, which is unlikely, the tshuva at hand, the tshuva to Charleston, had to have been written after 1879. So, and the Netziv died in 1893, I believe. So we're talking towards the end of the Netziv's life. So this still leaves us with questions regarding the tshuva, namely the context in which it was written. What I mean by that is, what were the circumstances in Charleston that the Netziv was addressing? Now let's first get, before we get to all of that, we'll see this kind of together, we'll see the text of the tshuva together with the historical context, we'll kind of combine all of that together, but let's begin with the text of the tshuva. So the tshuva actually doesn't begin... Okay, so it does not begin with the question of Mechalalei Shabbos. Again, when we say Mechalalei Shabbos, Sabbath desecrators, we mean Mechalalei Shabbos befarhesia, those that brazenly desecrate the Shabbos publicly. So the tshuva doesn't begin with the question of these Mechalalei Shabbos as being part of a minyan, but interestingly enough, the first question that the Netziv was asked was regarding a katan, or a minor, and whether or not a minor can be included in a minyan. So you might be surprised at the question. We're not going to go into that topic. That is not the main topic of the tshuva, nor is it what I want to dwell upon. However, both of these questions, right? So the question about including a minor, as well as the question about being about including these Mechalalei Shabbos, they reveal something rather clear about observant life in Charleston at the time. Namely, that it was not particularly robust. If they're asking two questions of the Netziv, and one is about including a minor, and one is about including Sabbath desecrators in a minyan, then it is clear to us that they had a difficulty finding, at least on a regular basis, 10 adult Orthodox males to form a minyan. Otherwise, they wouldn't be asking these questions. So you understand that this poses a real difficulty when trying to run a synagogue or a community. And so again, it reveals something to us about what the at least traditional Orthodox community in Charleston was facing at the time. That having been said, regarding the first question, that of a minor being part of a minyan, the Netziv tries to avoid answering this. So we're just going to run through this quickly because, again, like I said, it's not the main part of the tshuva. So again, regarding the first question of a katan, of a minor being part of a minyan, the Netziv tries to avoid answering it, saying that this is a question that has been subject to halachic debate for centuries. And in the end, he says he does not recommend it. Why? Since if it is allowed under the current extenuating circumstances, so the Netziv was concerned that it will become common, it will become more common practice even under normal, more accommodating circumstances. That's all regarding the first question that was asked of him regarding a minor in a minyan. Now let's get to the main part of the tshuva. The question of Mechalalei Shabbos Befarhesia, public Sabbath desecrators being included in a minyan. This brings us back to the historical context. So listen carefully. The Netziv records the question that was posed to him as follows. I'm going to read very briefly in Hebrew, and then I will translate. So again, the Netziv records the question that was posed to him as follows. Al da'at lehitztarefim ha-mechunim Beit Yaakov ve'hema mechalolim et ha-shabbat befarhesia. The question, as the Netziv records it, was about joining together with those who call themselves Beit Yaakov, or the house of Jacob, and they, says the Netziv, are public Sabbath desecrators. So Beit Yaakov, he names this group of public Sabbath desecrators, he gives them a name, a nice name, right? Beit Yaakov, the house of Jacob. The problem is, and the main problem, one of the main problems from a historical point of view in this tshuva, is that we have no record of any group in Charleston in the mid to late 19th century going by the name Beit Yaakov or Beth Jacob, House of Jacob, something of that. We have no record of any group in Charleston at the time going by that name. So the identity of these so-called Mechalalei Shabbos Befarhesia remains rather mysterious. So who are these people? Who possibly are these people? So we'll raise one suggestion, which again, I said I'm going to quote Dr. Pearl multiple times during the shiur, right? He's done some good work on this. So we'll raise one suggestion which Dr. Pearl raises, which doesn't come without its own problems, and you'll see what I mean. You'll see what I mean soon. So Dr. Pearl suggests that perhaps the Netziv mistakenly wrote Beit Yaakov, when really he meant Beth Elohim. Now Beth Elohim. Was and is, okay, if you go to Charleston nowadays, it was and is a known entity in the history of Charleston Jewry. Congregation Beth Elohim, or its full name as it's known, I believe till today, Kahal Kadosh Beth Elohim, is in fact the very first Reform congregation in the United States. It is still functioning today. If you go to Charleston, you can visit their shul, get some of their history. So as Dr. Gil Pearl suggests, maybe the Netziv was really referring to them, to Beth Elohim, but mistakenly wrote Beit Yaakov. That's what Dr. Gil suggests. However, there is a problem, there's a difficulty with this suggestion. What do I mean by that? It's not an insurmountable difficulty, but it is a difficulty, it is a problem nonetheless. So what's the problem? Namely, that this Reform congregation was started, again, we're talking, we dated the tshuva to at least after 1879. The problem is that this Reform congregation was started in 1824. when it broke away from Charleston's traditional Sephardic congregation. So based on that approximation as to the date of the tshuva that we just gave, it's more than 50 years before the tshuva was written, right? So the Reform congregation began more than 50 years, you could do the math, more than 50 years before the tshuva was written. So the question is, why would the traditional Orthodox Jews of Charleston, why would they only be asking this question 50 years later, over 50 years later? Why would they only be asking about joining together with these people in a minyan? Why would they only be asking the question over 50 years later? Now, one could possibly answer, okay, I said it's not an insurmountable difficulty, so one could possibly answer that until then they didn't have trouble getting a minyan of observant males. But at that point, right, in the 1880s or so, it was becoming more and more difficult for them, and hence they ask both about including Mechalalei Shabbos, as well as about including Ketanim, about including minors. It's a possible answer. Again, it's not 100%, but whatever the case may be, as we said, the exact historical circumstances of the tshuva, they remain somewhat cryptic. So, getting back to the text and getting back to the real meat of this tshuva. So again, the question, can we join together and can we include Mechalalei Shabbos Befarhesia, public Sabbath desecrators, in our minyan, in order to make a minyan? So what is the Netziv answer to the question? The Netziv offers a rather strident, I will have to say, strident answer to the question. And he says, again, very briefly in the Hebrew, he says, Chalila. Chalila lehitchaber elehem b'shum davar hashayach la'avodat Hashem. God forbid, says the Netziv, to join together with them, with these public Sabbath desecrators, in any matter related to the service of God. He says that halachically, public Sabbath desecrators, Mechalalei Shabbos b'farhesia, are grouped together with idol worshippers, and as he puts it, this is I believe important also, says the Netziv, there is no chance of them doing tshuva, of them repenting. So what I mean by that is that it's important, is that parenthetically, it's interesting to at least ask the question, right? Ask the question as to whether, according to the Netziv, if these Mechalalei Shabbos b'farhesia did have any chance of repenting, whether or not they would still be categorized together with idol worshippers, or whether or not, maybe if there was a chance of them repenting, so maybe he would go more easily on them. It's unclear. It's an interesting question to ask, but we don't have time beyond the scope of this year, so that's for another time. But again, I leave that question with you parenthetically. So that's what the Netziv paskins. That's what he rules. Again, that it is 100% forbidden. Chalila, he says, 100% forbidden to join together with them with anything regarding anything related to Avodat Hashem, to the service of God, which obviously would include having them join a minyan. And then the Netziv says, kind of anticipating the angst which the traditional Charleston Jews would have at not having a minyan all the time, or maybe even ever. And the Netziv says, Kishem Shem, he quotes the Gemara, the Talmud, Kishem Shem Mekablim Schar Al Hadrisha, Kach Mekablim Schar Al Haprisha, that sometimes you get credit, or maybe even more credit, for abstaining from something than for actually engaging in that. So that would be the case here, that he's encouraging, if you will, the Charleston Jews, the traditional Charleston Jews, by saying that don't have to worry about not having a minyan so long as you are not giving any sort of credence to these Mechalalei Shabbos b'farhesia, to these public Sabbath desecrators. So if we keep going in the tshuva, okay, if we keep going, it's not such a long tshuva, but if we keep going in the tshuva, we'll see that the Netziv himself goes even further. And he basically says that in general, one should try to avoid having anything to do with the group in question. meaning not only when it comes to religious matters, but in all matters of life. He talks about business. In all matters of life, one should avoid associating with these Sabbath desecrators when possible. As an important aside, and I believe it is a very important aside, same Dr. Gil Pearl who we've been citing has a very interesting and I think important article on the Netziv's general approach to religious tolerance and pluralism. He calls and he gathers his approach from all of the Netziv's writings. The Netziv left us with a pretty large amount of writings. And so Dr. Pearl gathers this from all of the Netziv's various writings, what he believes to be the Netziv's approach, general approach to religious tolerance and pluralism. The article was published in the Torah Ramada Journal a number of years ago, and I do recommend it. So that's what the Netziv paskins regarding this question. As a postscript to this whole discussion, which has been much has been written in modern times on this very question of counting Mechalalei Shabbos Befarhesia, public Sabbath desecrators, in a minyan. The Netziv was not the first to deal with this, and the Netziv was certainly not the last to deal with this question. And the question essentially revolves around the issue of the status of public Sabbath desecrators nowadays. Does it carry the same weight as it once did? So the Gemara, the Talmud already says that one who is Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia, who desecrates Shabbos publicly, essentially denies the existence of the Creator, and for purposes of Halacha, is considered a non-Jew in many respects. In terms of their Shechita, right, their ritual slaughter of animals, in terms of their wine, in terms of their touching and pouring wine, it would be considered as if a non-Jew did that, and then it has numerous ramifications in halacha. And so therefore, they would obviously, right, if they have the status of a non-Jew, they would obviously not be counted towards a minyan. Modern authorities, however, discuss whether those who desecrate Shabbos publicly nowadays have the same status, or is their desecration of Shabbos now not considered as brazen, as willful, and therefore the ramifications would not be the same as they once were? So if you look through the poskim in the history of discussion on this issue, so you'll find authorities such as Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Herzog, and Rav Moshe Feinstein all come out on the lenient side of this question. Again, it's clearly against what the Netziv was expressing, and clearly against what the Netziv was saying to the Jews of Charleston. But this issue seems to have evolved to where we are nowadays, and this seems the more lenient approach. Definitely seems to be the more acceptable approach on this question. So to summarize, the question posed to the Netziv and his answer teach us a number of things. So A, on a local level, right? So just as purely on a American Jewish history level, on a local level, it gives us a glimpse or two as to the state of the Jewish community, particularly the traditional community in Charleston at the time. Number two, B, it gives us a glimpse into the Netziv's approach to this issue. And again, I recommend reading Dr. Pearl's article, which I mentioned earlier. So that's the second thing. And lastly, it reflects some of the communal tensions in American Jewry at the time with the beginnings of Reform Judaism in the United States, and how halacha and halachic debate and halachic discussion reflects those communal tensions, how halacha began to deal with those very communal tensions that begin to rise in the United States, and these communal conflicts between orthodoxy and reform in the United States, something which had already been happening in Europe for again, depending on when exactly the tshuva was, but at least for decades. This would be a theme, these intra-communal conflicts between Orthodoxy and Reform and its reflection in the halachic literature, certainly a theme that continued well into the 20th century. So that's all for today. Next time, Bleed Nether, we will shift our focus from what we've, in terms of the history of American Jews, much of the discussion has been dealing with the, again, this is a general, kind of a general term, but the first two communities that came to this country. Number one is the small Sephardic community. Number two is more the German-speaking and Central European communities. What we'll begin to see next time is a shift towards already an Eastern, an early, very early Eastern European community in the United States, in the old Lower East Side, and we'll see some of the particular debate and the particular discussion that arose there, and we'll see how that reflects both the history of halacha here in America as well as the history of the Jewish community in general here in the United States.